It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Good morning and welcome back to the morning show. In the driver's seat, David Iverson. Alongside my partner in crime, the Saratoga Sledgehammer, Joey Correnti. Morning, Joey.
It is morning. Yeah, the sun isn't even up yet, but we are working hard in your free time so you don't have to. And apparently, we have lots of work to do because there was a roller coaster going on yesterday. What? And it started. I mean, we picked up on a little bit of it, but it just went full speed as soon as we got off the air yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened. Now, right, maybe we should give everybody a recap on where we were yesterday. Pretty much it was, heck no, we're not going to have a special session. That's never going to happen. Shut up, conservatives. Pretty much.
Yeah, we did just as we got off the air. I mean, actually, when we got off the air yesterday, we were still discussing the possibility of the special session, who might do what. But just as we got off the air, I don't even think we reported on it, that press release or whatever op-ed from Ogden and Albert came out. And that's when they stated that. I don't think we've even talked about that initial posture, but it doesn't matter because it's not the posture anymore. Before we get into any of that, though, I think it'd be interesting and fun to talk about where we first got that information, that op-ed or press release about Ogden and Albert saying, no, we're not going to have a special session. You're politically grandstanding. The conservatives are out of their mind. How did we find out about that?
Well, just so happens, right after our program, you, Joey, were listening to the radio down there in Saratoga, and there was a morning host who slipped and attributed the op-ed to Rebecca Fitzgerald. Now, it always seems, Joey, that these people can never keep their head down. You know, they make a lot of news during the session, and it's kind of like prairie dogs. You know, you fire a couple shots at prairie dogs, and they go down in their hole. And, well, not when I'm around because I don't miss them. But anyway, if you miss, they pop down in their hole, and they wait for the coast to be clear, and then they stick their head back up. Well, that's kind of what happened with Rebecca Fitzgerald. So this op-ed went out, press release went out. That's how it was first reported. And the radio host, whomever that may be, said, well, yeah, it was sent out by Rebecca Fitzgerald of LSO. Well, first of all, that's in error for a couple of reasons. LSO, generally speaking, doesn't issue press releases on behalf of legislative leadership. They will issue, you know, informational type things, but there would never issue something as highly politically charged as that one. And if Joey, if you have that op-ed up in front of you, well, wait a minute, I got it here. Hold on just a second. The thing was, like, it wasn't a press release. It was some pretty, like, highly charged political rhetoric. Let me give you an example. Quote, we do not recall the legislators who are now clamoring for a special session formally asking us or the chambers to utilize our 3 extra days. The very legislators who are asking for a special session created delay after delay during the budget session by asking for roll call votes, trying to resurrect zombie bills, and bringing procedural motions and filibustering debate. Simply put, they squandered precious time in a budget session where time is our enemy. We had plenty of time in our established calendar to pass bills and do veto overrides. In fact, we created a calendar where budget debate began on the first week of the session for the very purpose of having enough time to resolve our differences in conference committee and do veto overrides on the budget. In other words, you conservatives screwed up the session, so no, we're not going to do it.
Now, I got a little bit of a problem with that. Albert Sommers and Ogden Driscoll are the leadership of each chamber. And throughout the session, they allowed all of this presentation and bloviation and time wasting stuff, especially in the beginning. And I get it. There's traditions and rules about having privilege of the floor, recognizing your people up in the gallery. But sometimes this stuff took up to or over an hour to do all their special little dog and pony show stuff. They had a band or an orchestra come in and play for them at one time, took 45 minutes. If they're really concerned about the legislative calendar moving on and doing work, then they should say, hey, we gavel out at 5. You guys are welcome to come or go down to the auditorium. We'll catch up with you right after and we'll listen to all your good stuff. I love the fact that the legislature kicks off its first full day at noon or 2 most of the time after the governor's already wasted the first morning of work lying to us about his vision of the State of the Union. But I seem to recall the second to last week into the last week of session when we were still on Joint Conference Committee 1 and they were still doing the initial negotiations on the budget, that Friday they gaveled out at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the following Monday, the Senate didn't come back until 11. The House, a couple of times, took off at 2 p.m. and didn't gavel back in until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. Got through their morning little, you know, special recognition of special people, got no work done, went right to lunch. So whose fault is it that the daily schedule is set to take, I don't know, 72 to 96 hours at a block off and not actually be in there working? That couldn't be the people on the floor because they don't set the schedule for the chambers, do they?
No, they don't. That's legislative leadership. Now, we should probably also remind people of who Rebecca Fitzgerald is. Rebecca Fitzgerald is the owner, proprietor of Fitzgerald Strategies, which also happens to be the political outfit that the Wyoming caucus hired to run all of their stuff. Rebecca Fitzgerald is also the treasurer of the Wyoming caucus PAC. She is also highly involved with another political outfit called Wyoming Free, which is a political group that is operated by Dan Zwanitzer. Now, they claim to be for, you know, open transparency in elections and all of that bullcrap. But the other person that's involved in this, who happens to be the chairman of the Wyoming Caucus PAC, is Joanne True. Now, both of those two, Rebecca Fitzgerald and Joanne True, were operating out of Clark Stith's office. The Independence Network did a big investigation into what they were even doing inside Stith's office. And shocking though it may be, right after that article came out, in fact, I think it took a day, after that, they didn't even touch the doorknob of Clark Stith's office because they know that they were breaking the law. So, but the whole time, you know, we at the Independence Network kept saying, well, Albert Sommers and legislative leadership, they are totally in bed with Rebecca Fitzgerald and all of this, you know, law breaking that was going on inside the House. And there was a couple of complaints filed with the Legislative Service Office. Both of those were dismissed, saying, oh, well, you know, you can't really prove what happened in Clark Stith's office. And the whole time, it was Albert Sommers, Clark Stith, Barry Crago, who were behind it all. And now you have Rebecca Fitzgerald allegedly sending out press releases from legislative leadership.
You almost can't make this stuff up. If we sat down with everything we knew and the people that we wanted to really go after, we couldn't come up with stories as good as the truth. And the interesting thing about this is she sent out a press release on behalf of legislative leadership. Now, we already know and have proven that Albert Sommers has transferred money from his personal political campaign in YCFIS, I wouldn't say his personal, his campaign account, to the Wyoming caucus to pay Rebecca Fitzgerald for some consulting work or other things. But we didn't have any, I don't know, indication that Ogden may be involved. But apparently now there are private lobbyists who are paid for and associated with the Wyoming caucus that run, I don't know, info and coverage for both houses, both chambers of legislative leadership. That's a little bit concerning because now it takes the thing that the Senate has been standing on, with all the problems it's had this year, saying, well, at least we don't have, you know, named caucuses, divided factions with actual group titles and identities like that. But they do. It's not just the Redcoats and the conservatives with a couple of Democrats anymore. The Wyoming caucus has infiltrated the Senate proper.
Yes, sir. In fact, the email that was sent out alongside this press release or op-ed or whatever the kids are calling it these days, and this was obtained by the Independence Network early afternoon yesterday, late morning, early afternoon, and it was sent from Rebecca Fitzgerald to news outfits, and the subject line says, news release, presiding officers issue statement regarding potential special session, and the body of the email says, good morning, please find the attached a statement from Senate President Ogden Driscoll and Speaker of the House Albert Somers regarding the potential for a special session. Their contact numbers are included. Thank you, Rebecca. So, yes, it is the paid lobbyist slash political operative who apparently now is operating on behalf of legislative leadership, issuing press releases for them. Now, however you want it, later on, and let me get to this. This is also interesting. A wonderful listener of Cowboy State Politics sent a, let's see, let me find it, sent me a note yesterday morning, and it says, and I quote, a correction sent from Rebecca Fitzgerald to said news agencies, and it says, correction, news release from legislative presiding officers was meant to be an op-ed. Good morning. I mistakenly sent a press release from the legislative presiding officers as a news release. It was meant to be sent as an op-ed. I have attached it, formatted in the correct way. I greatly apologize for the mistake. Thank you, Rebecca. So there's no doubt whatsoever that Rebecca Fitzgerald is acting on behalf of the Senate and House of Representatives leadership.
Yeah. There's the interesting part to me. Of all of the questionable, potentially illegal, or just outright wrong things that you have done, been caught doing, or associated with, the distinction between a press release and an op-ed is the one you actually admit and attempt to, I don't know, rectify
through
further communication.
That's what you're going with?
How about you answer? Yeah, and I'll give her, you know, credit where credit is due. I know she might be a little, I don't know, absent-minded at times. After all, she is a nursing mother. It's funny how all of a sudden she doesn't have to go do her pumping every 5 minutes like she was during the first half of the session and has all this time to do all this other stuff. What happened to that baby?
Yeah. Yeah. See, that was the, to remind everybody, that was the excuse that was given for to explain away Rebecca Fitzgerald being in Clark Stith's office. Well, she was in there pumping. You know, she is a new mother, and, you know, she's got to take care of the baby, which we, of course, we understand. But that couldn't be further from the truth. A day and a half after all of this stuff went down in the House of Representatives, one of your illustrious hosts, sat in the House of Representatives gallery right by Clark Stith's office and watched Rebecca Fitzgerald not move for an entire day. Well, I mean, I guess she got up and moved at lunch, but while the legislature was in session, that lady didn't move. Excuse me, I didn't mean to swear. Definitely don't want to use the word lady, but she didn't move from her seat in the gallery for hours on end. Where a day and a half earlier, it was, well, no, she has to use the office to pump. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, there's definitely concerns for this kid if she is nursing. But speaking of poor babies, the rest of the day after we got this press release, I'm calling it, there was a series of articles that came out from a lot of legislators, and a bunch of them were in support of legislative leadership. We don't need a special session, and basically spent whatever space they had in the column inches of their some of them were op-eds, some of them were actual news reports where they were just quoted. But yeah, it was basically all morning until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a chiding of the conservatives, the Freedom Caucus, and any call for a special session or opposition to Governor Gordon's vetoes. I don't know if you have any examples of that, but I got one coming out of Sweetwater now. Representative Tony Nimick of Green River states, he agrees with Driscoll and Summers, citing political grandstanding as one of the things that held up the budget session this year as Wyoming Freedom Caucus and conservatives dragged their feet and caused most of the issues. Nimick said both the Senate and House wasted time during the session when they could have been addressing important topics. Quote, we had plenty of time to get these bills out if we did it right, Nimick said. He also agrees with Summers and Driscoll's about not thinking Wyoming's taxpayers should support a special session, quoted as saying, I don't think the people of Wyoming want to pay for that. Nimick went on to say there were a lot of good bills that died during the session, but thinks they can be addressed in 2025. Now, hold on. First of all, there was a lot of good bills that passed that got vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say we had plenty of time to get these bills out if we did it right, hey, some of these things, it was done right. The rules were applied, even though it was intensely labor focused and hard as hell. And like even Ogden Driscoll himself said, resurrecting zombie bills. Well, we wouldn't have to resurrect zombie bills if you didn't send them to kill committees. But there was good work that was done that was sent to the governor, who had made campaign promises in the past to sign pieces of legislation like that, and he vetoed it. So, yeah, I don't know how many statements or individual lawmakers came out riding the coattails of the Albert Ogden conservatives' little tirade in the morning, but most of the day was a bunch of rhinos and redcoats piling on. Representative J.T. Larson, Rock Springs, cited French writer Voltaire when he said the legislature shouldn't, quote, let perfect be the enemy of good. Larson said they could go back and rehash bills, but the legislature was still able to do good work for Wyoming during the budget session. Well, if you did good work during the budget session, wouldn't you want that work, especially those that had super majority of support from both chambers, not vetoed by the governor? You know, the question here is, how much do you respect the good work you say you did, whether you're going back into special session or not? And if J.T. Larson thinks that we shouldn't let perfect be the enemy of good as his stance and his response to the people on what's happening in the legislature and why we shouldn't go back into a special session, let me give you another quote from, I guess, another well-known philosopher. I believe he was once quoted as saying, we shouldn't let good enough be the bedfellow of principled representation. And you know who stated that one? That quote comes from Jailbird Joey. I am sick and tired of people reaching into Google AI and say, find me something historic that makes me sound smart, even though I can't connect it to anything. Yes, I agree. Perfect is the enemy of good, but good enough is basically the enemy of humanity. This is the problem that we've had, especially in the Wyoming legislature, forever. We got close to following the rules. We got close to kind of looking conservative. We got close to pretending we had principles. No, a lot of us are sick and tired of good enough. So we're not looking for perfection here. We're looking for improvement. And there is a lot of room for improvement, regardless of what J.T. Larson Googles and have historic philosophers say on his behalf.
One of the other things that I think we're glossing over here is this paragraph, and I won't read the whole thing again, but it starts out and it says, we do not recall the legislators who are now clamoring for a special session formerly asking us or the chambers to utilize our 3 extra days. First, that's saying, well, in order for us to do our job, somebody else has to suggest it. We've got these 3 days out there and nobody said they wanted to use them. Well, it is the job of legislative leadership to schedule time to override vetoes. Every other session works that way. When there's pieces of legislation that have passed the chamber overwhelmingly with veto-proof majorities, it's the job of leadership to wait for the response to those bills to come back just in case there's a veto. It's not the job of everybody else to say, well, you know, we might want to use these 3 extra days just in case Gordon screws us. That's the job of leadership. So sending everybody home early, that falls entirely on the shoulders of Ogden Driscoll and Albert Summers. Albert Ogden conservatives. I mean, that was their job, to look into their crystal ball and see which pieces of legislation they wanted to fight for and which ones they didn't. Now, to try to put it on the backs of the Freedom Caucus, that's just absolutely ridiculous. It shows you their ultimate lack of leadership in this session. And if you want to look at the session in total, the whole thing started to go off the rails right from the very beginning. Joey, you started out the program saying about all this pomp and circumstance and all of the time they wasted when they could have been, you know, overriding vetoes. But here they're blaming the conservatives for asking for things that they should be doing already, like, I don't know, recording votes so Wyoming citizens know what the heck that they were doing. I mean, this whole thing, this whole press release is nothing more to say, no, we're not going to do it, and how dare you for asking about it. And so let's kind of move to the next part. So then about, what would you say, about midday, late afternoon, they come out with another press release saying, well, you know, we should probably look at this and, you know, maybe we should have a special session. Joey, you want to take us through that?
Yeah, I'll kind of hit the finer points. What it seems happened, and you can find that press release almost anywhere, I'm sure, at some point. Oh, that's the other thing we got to discuss. We need to get our info page up on the Independence Network website. But we did get a press release. It looks like it was in a different format than the one this morning. This one actually looks like it came through the LSO, but it's on official legislative letterhead. And basically what it says is, we ran into some concerning issues with the veto or functionality of, what was it, Senate File 54, the one functional property tax relief bill, the one the governor vetoed, stating we can't process any of the notifications in time for taxpayers to get a notice that is accurate based on what they'll pay in September. None of the provisions of any of the other tax relief bills allowed for this. This was the only bill that did it right, and now it's been vetoed, and the Department of Revenue and county assessors won't be able to, it sounds like they said they weren't going to be able to enact any of those other bills functionally. So now they have to call a special session to address the veto or on Senate File 54, or at least the provisions of that legislation that is missing in the other pieces of legislation in order for anybody to get tax relief. It sounds so convoluted. I don't think functionally they're being honest and their answer is very accurate. But apparently now legislative leadership believes it's a good idea to call a special session, or they're pondering the idea of calling a special session. And again, this goes back to the procedures. It sounds like they want to call it specifically just to address tax relief issues that may be problematic in verbiage. But they don't get that call. They call a special session. Like we said yesterday, it works both ways. It's up to the opening vote on the floor as to what they're going to discuss, what they're going to limit, how long they're going to be there. So it's a Pandora's box on the other side now. And I don't know what's behind this, but I'm not comfortable saying, oh yeah, they just woke up and figured out this might be a problem and they changed their minds, you know, at lunchtime as they were discussing it with the Department of Revenue. I absolutely believe there's always a plan. Swords cut both ways. It could be just as problematic for the conservatives, knowing that the leadership and the liberals and the redcoats have an agenda. And we have no idea what they possibly could bring up, to the point where, yeah, they might address some vetoes, but they can go all the way back to introducing new legislation or trying to bring back bills that failed introduction at the beginning of the session. Again, there are really not a whole lot of rules on special session until they sit down and agree on what the rules are going to be.
Well, you're exactly right. The very first order of business, as they do at the opening of every session, is they talk about the rules. You know, what we're going to talk about, how we're going to do it. And once that vote is taken, then they go into doing their work. Now, I think the timeline is pretty important here. Because in the morning, it was, hell no, we're not going to do it, and you're stupid for even asking about it. And then all of a sudden, in the afternoon, they switch horses. So something happened there, and I think what probably happened is some phone calls to the Department of Revenue asking why Senate File 54 could not be implemented. And then all of a sudden, everything switched. So, you know, I don't know if it has to do with the story that, came out of before the session of Brenda Henson and the Department of Revenue training county assessors about House Bill 45. And I don't know if that has something to do with it, because that certainly wasn't right. So there may have been a residual from that story. And I think that at the very least, the Department of Revenue came out, and you can see that in the second press release. They came out and said, well, no, there really shouldn't be a problem implementing this. So there's a lot of movement going on behind the curtain. And like you said, Joey, if this thing kicks off, well, then, you know, it kind of does open up Pandora's box and anything could be discussed. But there is also one more bill that the governor vetoed that did pass with an overwhelming majority, and that's House Bill 125. Now, that one passed with a veto-proof majority in both chambers. But, Joey, there's a bunch of redcoats that don't want to have to go back to that bill and vote on it again. I went through the list, and of course, I don't have the there weren't any amendments on House Bill 125. So you're going to – well, there was one, but, you know, that one kind of minor. But let me just go here for a minute and talk about Senate File 109. That one was the, you know, repeal red flag gun seizure law, whatever they called it. I always screw up on the titles. But pretty much all of the redcoats made a pretty significant anti-gun vote somewhere along the way. Of course, when Senate File 109 passed, there was 7 amendments that they tried on third reading, and I think they got one of them. But the list of people that voted in favor of one of those amendments, any one of them that would have gutted the bill, is pretty much all the redcoats. So let me just quickly run through them so we get them all on the record here. Henderson, Larson, Lloyd Larson, Bob Nicholas, Jerry Obermueller, Dave Zwanitzer, Kevin O'Hearn, Ryan Berger, Andrew Byron, Forrest Chadwick, Ken Clouston, Clark Stith, Dan Zwanitzer, Albert Somers, Allred Brown, Landon Brown. By the way, it's been 1,170 some days since Landon Brown agreed to an interview and then didn't show up. There's Don Burkhart, Barry Crago, Eklund, J.T. Larson, Martha Lawley, Sandbags Newsom, Tony Nemec, David Northrup, Ender Oakley, Jared Olson, Tom Walters, and Cody Wiley. Now, that's pretty much the bulk of the Wyoming caucus. There's a couple of them that are not on that list. But none of those people want to come back and have to take yet another vote on a big-time gun bill. They don't want to open up that can of worms, which was probably one of the reasons why at first they were saying, we don't want a special session.
Yeah, this one's going to be fun. They're sitting pretty right now, or at least they were until yesterday, thinking, and I think we stated this pretty clearly on the show, I didn't want this bill, but I had to vote for it because I'm running for office, and I'm totally elated that the governor killed it because now I get the voting record and somebody else's fault that it's not happening. Well, that has also taken an about face, and they're going to have to go and defend those votes. And this is the problem with playing games in politics. Now, people can accuse you of being partisan, being biased, whatever, but if you're doing it based on principle and those principles don't change, they always know what they're going to get from you. I get a lot of people saying, you know, Joey, I can't stand you, but at least you're reliable. You're dependable. I always know what I'm going to get when I run into you and have to deal with you. And I think that that's important because then you don't have to face situations like this with any kind of stress. But the situation they're facing now is, yeah, they either have to prove that they were the ones wasting time in the legislative session by making 125 so difficult to get through and then ultimately voting for it en masse. I mean, huge numbers in support of the final bill, that they have to come back and either continue that or prove that they wasted a lot of time. They don't really believe in it. And I'm sure a lot of them will say, well, you know, the governor made some good points in his veto, and I'm going to go ahead and stick with old Marky Mark Gordon there. But most of them don't want to have that conversation at all. They don't want to rehash the bill. And I think a lot of these bills we're talking about right now, depending on how the special session is structured, anything that was passed and went into law, they can't bring back and amend. It's already law. Anything that was vetoed, The only thing they can do is override the veto. This is not a legislative session that's looking at doing a whole lot of, with what they're talking about focusing on, doing a whole lot of amending bills, changing what it is. It's bring it back or save it. You can't do a lot of changing. Now, that doesn't mean that in the session they can't bring other new or previously failed legislation. That's a different monster altogether. But the things we're really talking about, that people are up in arms about, it's really just up and down votes. It passed both chambers. The governor vetoed it. We can either vote to override his veto or not. You can't amend it. You can't add things to it. You would have to bring a whole new bill. And that scares them, because really the debate isn't about the bill anymore. It's about overriding a veto.
Exactly right. And I mean, you got to understand that none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. So there were five gun bills. Well, there was more than that, but there were five, four of them the governor signed. One of them he vetoed. And again, we said this numerous times on the program, there's a reason why we run gun bills in the budget session. It's because it's right before an election and you want to get people on the record and they'll be pressured to vote for it. So there was probably something happening behind the scenes that I have no evidence whatsoever to back this up, but it could have been that a call went out that said, you know, go ahead and vote for this. Governor's going to veto it. That way you're on the record voting for a gun bill and, you know, we don't have to worry about it going into law. Well, now we're talking about a special session where that's one of the vetoes that they're going to try to override. And so they're put in a position to voting for a major piece of gun legislation one more time. This time, they have no idea what's going to happen to it, and the governor doesn't have any, can't protect him in any way. So all of these people that are really are true believer liberals are either going to, they're going to have to make a choice. They're going to have to vote to override the veto, or they're going to have to, you know, vote against it and take their chances with Wyoming citizens. Either way, it's bad for them. And my guess is when the veto override comes up, at least on House Bill 125, that you'll see most of them vote for it. That would be my guess. I don't know, Joe, you might have a different view of it, but that's what I think would happen.
I think you probably are correct on some of that. And it's more proof of the way we've always done it, the traditions of the Senate and the House, and, you know, all this, we've been here forever. We're super, you know, multi-generational Wyomingites. You know, the genteel nature of the chamber. Basically, they're not used to having members of their own chamber that'll push back, publicly. You know, even Ogden Driscoll said it during the session, you got a problem, bring me out in the hall. We'll talk about it. Well, that's not work. That's interpersonal, you know, discussion about feelings. Work needs to be done on the floor or in the public. And so they were probably so comfortable because they got the heads up, hey, the governor's probably going to veto this. But that's not the big part. The big part is, well, if the governor's going to veto this, no one's ever going to come back. We already know we're not going to have time to override the veto. Nobody's going to get away with calling a special session. So they're in that mindset. The way we've always controlled and manipulated this system was unquestionable. It always worked before. Well, it's not always working now. And whether Ogden and Albert would have changed their minds or found some other reason to realize, oh, wait a minute, we probably do need to call a special session. There was still that call from the conservative side of both chambers to say, no, we want a special session. And at least the first portion of that work was achievable. I believe they absolutely could have gotten 35% to say, we need you to call the session. Now you can officially pull us on calling the session. But they're not used to it. They don't like it. They want it to be, oh, no, the procedure killed us. The process killed us. It was the governor, and, you know, shifting focus and blame. So more than why it's happening, the fact that it's happening is probably driving them crazy, because they're used to being in, you know, back room, smoke-filled rooms, good old boy control of everything without having to take responsibility. And now it's at their feet. Do you screw the people over on property tax relief and prove that you wasted a ton of time? And that's the thing about this. They're saying it's an issue with Senate File 54. The LSO goes over all these bills. The LSO writes most of these bills. You can't get a bill onto the floor without the LSO going through them. They were widely debated on the floor and in committees. And I do believe there was even about an hour of committee debate where Steve Harshman was testifying, stating, we have all these property tax bills, and here's what we got to do to get them to work together. People are going to have to choose, and we may have to amend one of the bills or some of the bills to say you can only use one of these if you, you know, have access or usability of more than one of these bills. And so they knew the intricacies of all these bills. So for it to come up so late after a veto that, oh, wait a minute, none of our tax property tax relief legislation works unless we go back and do this one. That again makes me question, how did all these really smart, really professional, super Wyoming people not see this earlier? I think they knew. I think there's something else in there, but they're definitely not used to the pushback.
No, they're not. And, you know, it's something they've never had to deal with before. And that was part of the frustration on their part that you saw during the session. Never, and a little bit last session. I mean, there were a couple bills that Albert kept in his drawer, and he got some heat for not bringing those to the floor. But it was nothing compared to what happened this session. And, you know, they've never before have they had a large portion of their chamber, and this goes for both the House and the Senate, basically revolt against leadership and say, no, we're not going to do that. And frankly, they didn't know how to deal with it. There was, you know, rule breaking going on all over the floor. You know, we mentioned Clark Stith's office. There was some pretty nasty stuff that happened behind the scenes. So I think you're right. They've never had to deal with this before. And now they've got a contingent in the legislature that there is a possibility that they could call a special session. Now, that brings me to something I want to point out in Trotsky Wolfson's article in the Cowpie. This one is entitled About Face, Driscoll Summers Now May Call a Special Session for a Property Tax Bill. And if you go all the way to the bottom of it, there's a section called Precedents. And let me just quote this to you. The last special session for the Wyoming legislature was in 2021 to deal with COVID-19 regulations. This session was called by former Senate President Dan Dockstader and House Speaker Eric Barlow, who got the necessary majority vote from their chambers. That is not true at all. That right there is absolutely untrue. That's not how that special session came around. In fact, it was the Freedom Caucus that got it started, and they are the ones that got the votes. And the reason we know that is an episode on Cowboy State Politics entitled, They're in Bed with Lobbyists. Every single person who voted against having a special session, and all of them were redcoats, took money from Pfizer and the Wyoming Medical Lobby. If you listen to that episode, I name every single one of them who took money from Pfizer to vote against having a special session. So right there, you have Trotsky Wolfson absolutely not telling you the truth about what happened in the last special session. And the two people he's doing it in, you know, doing the favor for is former Redcoat Speaker of the House, Eric Barlow, and Dan Dockstader. But the reason I bring this up is, one, it's absolutely not true, and two, this is just another example of the Cowpie and Trotsky Wolfson trying to cover for legislative leadership. You know, you can't trust hardly anything that comes out of the Cowpie anyway, but you get little pieces like this that, I mean, it's revisionist history. It's absolutely disgraceful. But they're trying to craft the narrative that it is the Wyoming caucus and the redcoats in the House that are trying to do the work of Wyoming citizens. I mean, that's exactly what all of this is about. And they screwed up yesterday by issuing that press release, because that's really what it was in the morning, no matter what Rebecca Fitzgerald says about it later. They issued that. It was snotty. It was indignant. It was insulting. And then not even eight hours later, they come out and say, well, you know, maybe we ought to have a special session. So it's an attempt to rewrite the entire narrative. And the truth of the matter is it's been the Wyoming caucus all along that has been pushing to deal with these things that are firmly on the backs of Wyoming citizens. They closed out the legislative session saying that, nope, we've done enough. They even had 3 extra days to deal with these veto overrides, and Albert Sommers and Ogden Driscoll sent everybody home early, knowing that they wouldn't be able to override a veto because they had all gone home. All of that is on the shoulders of Albert Ogden conservatives. And you have to look at the reality of it. It is the Wyoming caucus that each and every time, both in 2021 and now in 2024, that have been sticking up for Wyoming citizens saying, no, we need to deal with this. You know, the governor vetoed critical pieces of legislation that had veto-proof majorities, and we need to go back into session and finish our work. So let's just be really clear on what the narrative is here.
Yep. And, you know, we have started a business. I mean, we could just be call it Leo's Word Fixin' Incorporated. We exist here at the Independence Network specifically because of this stuff. And just because it's old news doesn't mean it's not relevant, because they rehash it and they bring it up in future situations saying, no, look at the article I wrote 2 years ago. I told you how it was then, and now you see the continue. Well, you were lying back then, Leo. That's why I call him Little Lion Leo Trotsky. It's inaccurate at best and easily proven to be inaccurate. So how any of these people call themselves journalists, which once again, I am not, but I will still say, hey, you know, I'm not an auto mechanic, but when I send my vehicle to a guy that is and they do a horrible job, hey, you're a crappy mechanic. I am allowed to have that opinion. It is what it is. So yeah, I think a lot of this stuff is fairly obvious. And let me talk about the significance of the 3 days, because I think some of that's being missed. If the legislature, and leadership definitely knows this, if the legislature had said, we have 3 days that we constitutionally can still use, we're adding it to the calendar, it would have shifted the responsibility of the governor to have had all of his vetoes done within those 3 days. Not because they only had 3 days left, but because while the legislature is in session, the governor only has 3 days to sign any bills on his desk. Now, once they adjourn, he's got 15. So some people have been saying, well, 3 days wouldn't have mattered because he didn't veto it until 2 weeks later. Well, he only had the opportunity to veto it 2 weeks later because they didn't use those 3 days. Now, if it had been 2 days, we'd be in the same position, but they happen to have the just exact amount of time available to have forced the governor procedurally via the Constitution to have made a decision on these bills while they were still there. And yeah, he might have waited till day 3, vetoed them, hoping they would just go home and say, well, we don't have time. But they could have decided to have a special session at that point. At least it would have brought us an expedited process that we're now dealing with a couple weeks later. And the fact that legislative leadership knew this, that legislative leadership avoided this, and then legislative leadership tries to blame the conservatives for not asking for this soon enough, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's what I'm always pointing out, the procedure, the way they play the game with the rules and the calendars. And now it's catching up with them, because not only are they in a position where it's likely that we could have a special session, but they're potentially going to have to call for it themselves.
And that's the one thing that they were hoping to avoid, because now anything, you know, if they decide to go into special session, or if there's enough votes to call one, then all of this is going to rest on their shoulders. I want to point out one thing that I think might be a little tangential to what we're talking about this morning, but in this morning's edition of the Casper or the Pravda on the Platte, there's a whole column that says Gordon rescues gun-free zones. And let me just read a little bit of it. Governor Mark Gordon on Friday vetoed a bill that would repeal gun-free zones and signed 4 other gun rights bills into law. Governor vetoed House Bill 123, sponsored by Jeremy Harrelson, which would have allowed for concealed carry in any meetings. Okay, we know the rest of that. So the point that the Pravda is trying to make here is, oh, look at what Gordon did. You know, he saved our gun-free zones. Isn't he amazing? So, you know, pretty much during the entire session and before, the Pravda has not really been reporting on any Wyoming political matters. So the very morning after all of this stuff goes down, you see an article above the fold on the front page that says, oh, look at what a great job Governor Gordon is doing for us. I mean, none of this is, you know, is by happenstance. you know, this is to give cover to Mark Gordon for vetoing House Bill 125. That's all it is.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's more gamesmanship, at least, is related to known process, known procedure. A lot of this stuff is just emotional ridiculousness. And the fact that it's coming out of the Red Star Tribune, which if you look down the rest of the column inches, go to their Facebook page, go to their website, scroll down and see how many Wyoming politics-based stories that are actually about politics, not celebrating socialism and liberalism, are there. They almost don't report on any of this. So, I don't know. The Red Star Tribune is on its way out. It's not even focused on Wyoming issues anymore. And when they do chime in, it's a whole bunch of, you know, kumbaya, love the Earth Action Club, and nothing to do with the values of the Wyoming people or consideration of our constitutionally protected liberties. So I don't even take it with a grain of salt anymore. I just don't take it. I'm not paying to get past their paywall. It's all just absolute stupidity. It has nothing to do with actual processes. It has to do with celebrating the fact that some people out there have allowed other people's fear to become more valuable than our liberty. And that's it.
Yeah, absolutely right. Looking at a couple of other news sources, the Wyoming Turkey Vulture, front page of their website says, calls for a special session to override Gordon's vetoes denied by legislative leaders. So, I mean, at the very least, they don't have all of their soldiers in a line. They've sent out mixed messaging. They haven't been clear about, you know, what their plans are, if they even had a plan. And it's pretty clear. Like, if you want to know what's going on in Albert Ogden conservatives' brain, all you got to do is just look at the media. And usually they're all in line. They've all got the same talking points. They all got the memo in the morning. But in this case, not so much. So you have the cow pie saying, yeah, well, now maybe we ought to. Here's the Tribune Eagle, the paper in Cheyenne, saying that, no, it's being denied by legislative leaders. So this whole thing is a crapshoot. And, I mean, I don't think that any of them saw the pushback that they were going to get from conservatives.
No, and it really is the arrogance of it, the fact that, no, we're not going to have the strong, bold statements we're making. This is the way it's going to be. We're not going to have a special session. And then other legislators piling on. Yeah, it was the Freedom Caucus, and they wasted all this time, and they drug their feet. And other statements of, if they wouldn't have wasted so much time calling for roll call votes. We have a series of postures out there that, I don't know, premature at best, but it shows that it's just arrogance, because they made some pretty bold statements that now they have to either go back on or go into a special session begrudgingly because of it. And let's talk about arrogance a little, because we've talked about the governor's vetoes on specific bills, but there's some line items in the budget that he vetoed that are problematic as well. Don't we have a little story about a water tower and some snarky comments on a line item veto there out of Wheatland?
Now, this one's interesting because there was a now, and you might have to correct me on this, Joey, but in Wheatland, there is a water tower that is, I mean, there somewhere on the cow pie, there's a picture of it. I mean, it's in bad shape. According to Representative Haroldson, you can park your truck next to that water tower, and you can get it washed off any day of the week. It's in really bad shape, and there are some estimates that that whole thing is going to fail at any time. And, I mean, it's a big water tower, and if that thing goes, it's going to wipe out several blocks in Wheatland. So it definitely needs to be addressed. And there was a piece of legislation that was brought by Representative Haroldson. I'm pretty sure this is how it went down. And, you know, that guy pleaded on the floor to get that water tower fixed. Now, Representative Haroldson usually is not in the business of saying, hey, I got to bring home the bacon. But here we're talking about a situation where people really are in danger. You know, houses are going to be washed away. Businesses are going to be washed away. I mean, this is a big, big deal. Well, that bill failed, and there was a lot of discussion on the floor of, well, you know, we just we can't be sending money home for pet projects and all of that stuff. You know, all the normal arguments that we would make about pork barrel spending. But let's just take a second here. There's a difference between pork barrel spending, you know, legislation for your own special project that really isn't necessary, and when you're talking about projects that we have to do to protect the lives and property of Wyoming citizens. This is a choice of the latter. Well, that bill was killed on the House floor, and then to cover their butts, Lloyd Larson and Bob Nicholas brought it as a budget amendment. And, you know, it was kind of one of those, okay, we killed your bill, but we've included it in the budget so that we can get the water tower fixed. So along the timeline, the vote comes up on the budget, and Representative Haroldson votes against the budget. Rightfully so, by the way, because there was so much pork barrel spending in there that, I mean, no self-respecting, actually no legislator should vote for it, but 22 of the conservatives voted against it. So in the governor's letter, well, the governor ended up vetoing that out. You know, no more fixing the water tower. But in his veto letter, there was a really snarky comment, and I don't have it in front of me, but basically it said that, well, because local representation voted against the budget, I'm vetoing this. So you take it from there, Joey.
Yeah, the statement in the line item veto from the governor, and that's going to be in Section 341, the American Rescue Plan Act section of House Bill 1, which is the the state's budget. Governor Gordon goes through, you know, why he doesn't think that this project is worthy, how they can handle it differently. And then he ends by stating, following the lead of local legislators who voted against the budget, thereby indicating their regard for the inclusion of this project in the budget, I have removed this provision. So it's snarky, fine. You want to be snarky, but Governor Gordon did not do himself any favors by adding that commentary to the end of his veto. He could have just stuck to the whys and left it there. But, you know, like I said, we're the ones that are incivil. We're the ones that, you know, violate the process by making it about personalities and being divisive and vindictive. And then you have the governor coming out with something like this, and crickets from the Redcoats, crickets from the Wyoming caucus, crickets from the mainstream media, until Jeremy Haroldson wrote an op-ed on it himself. And now they have an op-ed out there and a story. But first thing I want to point out, this water tower, all told, would have cost about $2 million, and they argued we can't spend money on pet projects for back home.
Oh, hold on.
Let me
interrupt you just real quick. That's not the total cost of the water tower. The town of Wheatland themselves have raised a significant amount of the money, and I don't remember the exact dollar number, but I think on the floor, Representative Haroldson said that they had something like $1.2 million to fix it. So it's not like it's a handout at all. This is no different than any of the water projects that happen around the state. You know, there's matching funds and all of that. So this isn't a handout at all. Sorry for the interruption, Joey. Go ahead.
Well, it's absolutely fine. That only strengthens the argument I'm about to make, because my focus was on the whole, we can't be appropriating money for pet projects back home. Yet, in the same legislative session, they approved $3.5 million for Casper on the chances that it might qualify to host the international air races the national air races, so they can improve the structure and some of the stuff around their airport. What? That's just fun time stuff. That's $3.5 million. That's a sending money back to Casper so your representatives can look good, so you guys can have a party in an airplane or a series of airplanes. But we can't address critical infrastructure in the proper way. Again, absolute hypocrisy. But State Representative Jeremy Haroldson of Wheatland says it's likely Governor Mark Gordon violated the U.S. Constitution with a reckless and vindictive veto of the $2 million to help replace a failing water tower in his town. Quote, the governor issued a line item veto to remove funding for an aging water tower in my hometown of Wheatland. a water tower that is in such poor shape it could breach at any moment, destroying 10 or more city blocks in its wake. Within the area of this aging water tower, countless homes, churches, nursing home, and school. Haroldson went on to write that he believes the governor's move was a reckless and vindictive, possibly unconstitutional move. The last barb stems from the fact that the governor specifically said in his veto letter what I just read you, that it's because he voted against it. And I think they're looking at the U.S. Constitution. I believe Representative Haroldson said something about equal protection or weaponizing the law. But I happen to look at the Wyoming Constitution, and Article 4, Section 10 is titled Bribery or Coercion of or by the Governor. And there's a specific line in there that stood out to me. And it says, any governor in this state who menaces any member by threatened or actual use of his veto power shall be punished in the manner now or that may hereafter be provided by law, and upon conviction thereof shall forfeit all right to hold or exercise any office of trust or honor in this state. Now, I'm not saying the governor didn't have the right to veto that line item. I'm not saying the governor didn't have good reason in his own mind. I'm saying when he added that last little part that specifically points out, without actually naming him, Representative Haroldson and his vote against the budget as in, you know, in its entirety as the reason for his veto, that made it arbitrary. That made it vindictive. It was retribution. And in my mind, is a violation of this provision of our Constitution because it is menacing. You didn't do this, so I'm not giving you what you want. And I'm going to embarrass you in my official veto letter by saying the reason you're not getting it is because you didn't vote for it yourself. And that's not only a violation of the Constitution, it's one that carries a specific penalty of being brought up on charges. And if you're convicted, never being able to hold office in the state again. This is your governor.
Absolutely. I mean, he did it knowingly. He did it with, to use a criminal term, malice aforethought. I mean, that's very clear. You know, had he left that one little sentence out of his veto letter, all of us would have said, well, Gordon's a piece of crap for not doing this, but, you know, we got to fix it some other way. But because he added that sentence, you know, following the lead of local leaders or however he put it, I think it falls clearly within that provision in the Constitution. And by the way, if you want to read Representative Haroldson's op-ed, it's up on the Independence Network site right now. Just go to the articles page and you can read the whole thing. Essentially, it's what Joey just repeated to you. But I don't think that we've ever seen something like this before. I mean, certainly there's been governors who have vetoed I don't want to call them pet projects or things that local representatives really cared about before, but I don't think we've ever seen a governor come out and say, I'm doing this because you voted against the budget, which is essentially what he said.
It was totally unnecessary. Like I said, he had all of the verbiage before that last sentence that would have said, we don't like you anyway. And it would have been a conversation about, did he do it for this reason? We don't really know. He never, but in this case, and it's basically the last line says, nana, nana, boo, boo, stick your head in doo-doo. I mean, it's that childish. It really is. Especially coming from a governor that has made repeated statements about the legislature needs to work together. We need to stop being so divisive. We can find a way to, you know, bring Wyoming solutions to Wyoming problems. What's more Wyoming than saying one of our rural agriculture-based towns is about to be flooded by its own failing infrastructure? Let's throw a couple bucks at that and make sure that we're not having that problem. I don't know of a more Wyoming solution than taking care of water in an agriculture area and making sure, I don't know, the rest of your town's infrastructure doesn't wash away and people die. But who am I to say? But the bottom line is, this is another example of they're on their way out. It's the death rattle. They're scared. And they're getting to the point where they're embodying, and you know, the classic phrase, when someone complains about something, they're actually complaining about themselves, not what you're doing. And we're seeing it play out in spades here across the board through the legislature, up into leadership, and now from the governor. The only thing I think the governor can sit back on is the fact that he knows he's got 2.5 years left where nobody can really touch him unless we can bring him up on charges for violating the Constitution. And he doesn't have to worry about re-election. I use the term super lame duck because almost nobody is more lame than Mark Gordon, but he has no worries. Everything he's doing now is he's setting himself up for something in the future. And I'm almost surprised that with all of the ridiculous and horrific crap Mark Gordon has said to or on the behalf of Wyoming in the last year and a half, that this actually ended up in a formal doc. This is memorialized. This is going to be in the record forever because it's part of an official veto message. And you want to talk about, you know, absolute idiocy and embarrassing for the state of Wyoming, the legislature, the government. This is a perfect example of absolute idiocy and something that Wyoming should be completely embarrassed about and not willing to let slide, especially if it is a violation of the Constitution.
Well, I don't think we could have said it better than that. And I think that's a perfect place to end. Make sure that you catch Joey's program later on today. On Just Blame Joey. I'm sure he's going to talk about this at a little more in depth. And also, don't forget about Cowboy State Politics, which comes on right now.